I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Andrew Chestnut. He's professor of religious studies at Virginia Commonwealth University School of World Studies. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me back, Mary Charlotte.
So we are here to talk about Pope Francis, who has now been pope for about 6 months. And we thought this would be a good time to talk with you about who he is and what he's done so far. He came in as an advocate, unlike some of his predecessors, really as an advocate for the poorest and most vulnerable people among us. What is he doing?
Yeah, it's really extraordinary. He's had a laser focus on the poor and oppressed of the world, and not only the poor and oppressed Catholics. And what it really seems to me is that he's been readopting this so-called preferential option for the poor, that liberation theology, this new theology that sprang up in Latin America in the 1960s and 1970s, posited that the church really should focus its evangelization efforts, its pastoral efforts, on the poor and oppressed of Latin America. And that apparently had been snuffed out under his papal predecessors, but it really seems like he's been resurrecting this preferential option for the poor and liberation theology, although as cleric in Argentina, he was really no partisan of liberation theology. So yeah, he's taken some real important steps. It's only been 6 months, as you point out, so it remains to be seen what kind of reforms we're going to see at the Vatican, specifically the Curia. But certainly, as far as his discourse and his public act, all of the focus has been on poor parishioners.
And what kind of works are they actually doing?
Again, it's been only 6 months, and so I don't think we can really speak to any specific programs yet, but he's really trying to kick the program of evangelization of his predecessors called New Evangelization into high gear, in which he encourages priests and bishops and all Catholics to get out of their diocese and their parish churches and evangelize particularly the poor. But in terms of concrete, specific actions, we really haven't seen any yet.
Your book, Competitive Spirits, which we talked about when it first came out about, I think it was about 10 years ago, gave us a very interesting perspective on Latin America and the fact that a lot of former Catholics have been converted to various forms of evangelical Protestantism, because these other kinds of Protestantism basically offered better customer service. This pope is from Argentina. Do you think that his appointment as pope was part of a kind of a political move to keep Latin American Catholics from leaving the church?
Yeah, no doubt. Actually, Mary Charlotte, I would say that's the primary factor in why we see the first New World pope ever. Yes, the Catholic Church has just been hemorrhaging members in Latin America since the 1950s. And keep in mind, Latin America is home to almost half of the world's 1.2 billion Catholics. And so I think the Vatican, in choosing Francis, made this very strategic decision that to cut their losses in Europe, where there hadn't been much vitality in the Catholic Church. Africa and Asia were doing really well, but the great populations epicenter of the Catholic Church had been in great decline, and as you point out, mostly losing out to evangelical Protestant churches, more specifically Pentecostal churches, but also another rising trend in Latin America as well as here in the United States has been the rise of those who have no religious affiliation, the so-called nuns as well. So yeah, I really think that's kind of the outsider sociological explanation of, yes, why we see the first Latin American, first New World Pope. And there's also a big concern about the Catholic Church here in the United States. We have one quarter of Americans are Catholic. We have the fourth largest Catholic population on earth. Yet the church here, too, has been in trouble as well. I just saw a survey yesterday showing that only 53% of Latinos in the United States are still Catholic, and this figure is continuing to decline. So another major concern for the global church is the Catholic population in the United States, whose future is mostly a Latino one.
How have Latin Americans responded to this pope?
In general, just with incredible enthusiasm. I was privileged to actually be in Rio de Janeiro during the week that he was there for World Youth Day, and to see the 3 million pilgrims occupying every inch of real estate on Copacabana Beach, and just the exuberance, not only of the Brazilians, but of all of the people who had gathered throughout the world there, was incredible. There is a small conservative backlash that's taking place in Latin America and the United States as well. But in general, I would say Latin American Catholics are ecstatic over this, the first Latin American pope. He's got the same type of charisma as Pope John Paul II, yet he's one of their own. His native language is Spanish, and indeed I was so pleased to see him actually speaking Spanish and Brazilian Portuguese as well during his week in Rio, and I actually wish he would do it more when he's in Rome, given that Spanish is the number one language of Catholics worldwide.
Another thing that this Pope, Pope Francis, has been talking about is taking the focus of the church away from basically trying to control people's sexuality. Do you think that the church is on a path to doing away with all those rules against birth control and abortion and homosexuality and sex outside of marriage and things like that?
I think the church is probably on a slow path to reform on many of those issues, but I think more specifically what he said in this recent path-breaking interview was that, you know, there's just been too much focus on the issue of gays and abortion and contraception. And that mostly really was targeted to the U.S. Catholic Church, because as those of us who pay attention to these matters know, the Catholic hierarchy here really has just made that their overall priority for the last 15 or 20 years. And I think that Pope Francis has been very perceptive in saying that kind of laser focus on these narrow issues really has alienated a lot of American Catholics. And I think a lot of people have left the church over this, while a lot of the hierarchy has just neglected other pastoral issues to this just myopic view of homosexuality, abortion, and contraception. So I really think it was largely directed at the American church.
Is Catholicism in the United States and worldwide, is it able to retain both its membership and its priests? How is it doing in both of those areas? I mean, I think a lot of people who are kind of drawn to service as a priest or minister might decide in this day and age that they really don't have to choose celibacy.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, again, since he's only been there 6 months, we don't know what kind of effect he's going to have. I mean, we need to have this conversation in maybe 4 or 5 years and see. But again, you know, the primary reason that he's there is because in many regions, and particularly the Americas, throw in the United States, and you do have half the world's Catholics in the Americas, was on a long-term slide. And so I think it remains to be seen if the fervor and enthusiasm that we seems to be apparent publicly is really going to translate not only into reversing the decline, but possible church growth. So I think we need to have this conversation in a few years. There is some evidence that in certain countries, like I think Brazil is one of them, that there has been an increase in priestly vocations in the last few years. But I think that actually in terms of religious or nuns, that continues to decline, particularly in the Americas as well. So I think that the jury is still out on that. But I think in terms of going back to your question, you know, will we see reforms in matters of sexuality? I think probably the most likely reform we're going to see, and probably not during his papacy, but maybe in, you know, 20 to 30 years, is doing away with the celibacy requirement, because that really puts the church at a fantastic competitive disadvantage, particularly with Protestants. And you know, for many centuries, that was not a requirement. So I think that will be the first major change on that front that we see, but again, probably not during the papacy of Francis.
We're talking to religious studies professor Andrew Chesnut. Now, Pope Francis is also a charismatic Catholic. What is that? What does that mean?
It means that, and I wouldn't, although I've called him charismatic, he's not an official card-carrying member, because there actually is a specific movement called the Catholic Charismatic Renewal, which, interestingly, like Pentecostalism, it's basically the Catholic version of Pentecostalism, which means it really emphasizes the role of the third person of the Holy Trinity, or the Holy Spirit. And so it's a big emphasis on such Pentecostal things as being baptized in the Holy Spirit, and the so-called charismata or gifts of the Holy Spirit, such as speaking tongues, prophecy, revelation. So it's really the Catholic version of Pentecostalism. And interestingly, it also, like Pentecostalism, was born here in the United States, specifically in Pittsburgh in the late 1960s. This, by far, the Catholic Charismatic Renewal, is the most vital and dynamic lay movement throughout the entire global South. So in the African Church, the Philippines, about 80% of all Filipino Catholics are charismatics. And in Latin America, in a recent survey in Brazil, over 60% of Brazilian Catholics identify themselves as charismatics. And so even before Francis came on the scene, there was a certain revitalization in some countries of Latin America led by these Catholic charismatics. And what little evangelization has taken place of trying to bring back lapsed Catholics has been led by these Catholic charismatics. But in a nutshell, it's really the Catholic Church's answer or version of Protestant Pentecostalism.
I remember in the early 90s reading a little tiny article in the New York Times saying that the Catholic Church had finally admitted that Galileo was right. And I thought, you know, that's 500 years that it took this power structure to catch up with reality. It seems like they're on a path to, and actually I'd like your perspective on this, are they on a path to having kind of more responsiveness to what is actually going on in the world around them?
Yes, yes, I think so. I think this path really started during the Second Vatican Council, which is a three-year conference of bishops around the world, which took place in Rome from 1962 to 1965. That really led to some sweeping reforms during that period. But the popes after Pope John the 23rd, who initiated that, were much more conservative. And so here with Francis, it seems like we're returning to this era of a fresh breath of air being blown into the church, and the church being much more responsive, I think, to both the spiritual and material needs of parishioners. So yeah, I think we're in the process of the church being remade in that fashion. But what remains to be seen is, given Francis's relatively advanced age, he's 76, and the fact that he only has one lung, we really don't know, you know, how much longer, how much time he has to implement these types of reforms, and whether or not his successor will carry on, because you never know who his successor might be. So while these are really exciting times, and I think it's possible that we're going to look at some serious reforms, the jury's still out. We just don't know how much time he has, and you know, how much of a backlash there is going to be from the more conservative sectors of the Curia in particular.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, if you're the head of an organization, you're going to carry out reforms, you have to have the rank and file of that organization on board with you. Otherwise, nothing's going to work.
Yeah, and I think he does have that critical mass with him. In fact, I was at odds with a lot of Vatican watchers who were sure that our new pope was going to be Italian, because they just didn't think that enough Europeans were actually going to vote for a non-European candidate. So I think just the fact that enough Europeans voted for him sends a signal that there is a critical mass, probably the majority of the world's cardinals, the hierarchy of the church, who are in favor of concrete reforms because, you know, they're aware of the numbers, of the statistics, particularly here in, you know, a long-term slide here in the Americas. I mean, get this, Brazil, as late as 1950, was 99% Catholic. That figure is down to only 63% today. So, you know, if the trend continues, Brazil's looking at being a non-Catholic majority country within a couple of decades. And keep in mind, Brazil has the largest Catholic population on Earth. So I think there is a critical mass behind him. I think he has the muscle to enact these types of reforms.
So when a pope sets out to do a kind of leadership in which their main focus is not oppressing sexuality, but on the other hand, actually helping the poorest people in society and giving them food and help and empowerment of various kinds, is that a quid pro quo? Do they then require allegiance to the church?
It depends. It depends what part of the church you're talking about. Because, for example, Catholic Charities and Caritas and such don't necessarily engage in that kind of quid pro quo. You know, helping out. You know, you have to come to Mass and such. There's not that requirement. But obviously, one of the main charges of Francis is to evangelize, and so obviously the hope would be that many, particularly these lapsed Catholics, would return to the Church. But I don't think that at least Francis has the quid pro quo mentality, although others might. But in general, you know, the larger worldwide Catholic charities have not operated that way either.
It's interesting that Pope Francis has even said positive words about non-believers.
Yeah. He gave a few weeks ago an extraordinary interview to an Italian atheist, editor of one of the leading Italian newspapers. And yes, he's really been out there on the front lines engaging with atheists, Muslims, other non-Catholics. And it's, you know, called upon his fellow clerics to get out of their comfortable parish offices, shake things up, and meet people of the world, just as one would argue that, you know, the Jesus portrayed in the Gospels did as well. So, yeah, he's really been extraordinary with that, particularly compared to his immediate predecessor, Benedict, who definitely was not known for that.
Right. Andrew Chesnut is professor of religious studies at Virginia Commonwealth University School of World Studies. Thank you so much for spending this time with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back, Mary Charlotte.